Off the Ball Breakfast.
Yeah, it's an it's like the people put up the on today's office on the Monday and they're somewhere unbelievable. It's like I am literally at the corner. The player is right beside me.
You don't
me.
Get that much anymore, do you?
No, you don't.
The old today's office.
Today's and office, you're in, and you're sitting on the beach.
Like, yeah. Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Hurling Pod
on Off the Ball
with Apple Green. Making every journey better.
Yeah, it's a slightly delayed Hurling Pod this weekend because James Cahill was sick. I was sick last week. Murph stood in. And everyone was incredibly complimentary about the job that Murph did. Even his reads of the sponsorship lines, which he wasn't entirely sure of himself. But yeah. he did a stellar job. A lot of people are pointing it out, particularly in the YouTube comments. I noticed that, you know, this isn't what Murph normally does, but he did a stellar job of stepping in while I was sick last week. James Cahill was sick on Sunday evening, so we had to push back. So I'm sorry that the pod is slightly late. Are you feeling better now, Skell?
I'm 6 out of 10.
Right. Okay. Yeah. We'll take that. You know, bang average, right down the middle.
It's above average, Will. It's probably better than most. No sleep last night in with England.
Well, that's kind of to be expected. But yeah. When we basically got a voice note from Skell, this is the key. If you ever want to tell your employer that you're not going to make it in for the next day, never send a text message because they know you're trying to pull a fast one. In Skell's case, he put a voice note in. We could barely hear his voice on the voice note. We went, for a podcast, this probably isn't going to work.
It's not ideal. Not ideal.
I was under pressure. But we're here.
And we all wanted to have a quick look at League Sunday as well, purely because on the weekend just gone by, there was only one game on the TV. Like, it was a very decent game. We'll talk about it in a second. But because so much of it was in the dark, I think we needed to at least see the highlights before we had this chat. The good news for this weekend, it's a break weekend in the football. So there's hurling across the board both days on the TV. So plenty to look forward to. And it's going to make our job a little bit easier for the podcast next week. But what happened in the weekend just gone by? Well, Cork got a very rare win at Nolan Park. They hadn't won in the regular section of the league against Kilkenny at the venue since 1987. They're now on the verge of the league final. They play Limerick in their penultimate game. They've got already relegated Offaly in their last game, so you would think the Cork are going back to a league final. Alan Connolly, the most honest man in the world, when the game finished, he was talking to Micheál O'Donnell on TG Carr. Alan, what's the aim? You fully expect he's going to go, well, you know, we've got a difficult game now coming up against Limerick. He said, no, we're going to win that game, we're going to win the league, we're going to win Munster, and we're going to win the All-Ireland. That's what we're going to do. So Alan Connolly is a man who is determined to make up for what happened in the second half of the All-Ireland final last year, full of confidence. Galway, of course, picked up a crucial win against Waterford in the battle to beat the drop. It puts Waterford back in relegation trouble again. Offaly are officially down following their defeat to Limerick, but that defeat for Offaly came at a cost for Limerick, with Darragh Donovan out for the foreseeable future with a shoulder injury. He's going to be a big doubt for the Munster Championship. Skell's had that injury before. It's the AC joint to the shoulder. So John Kiely unsure about the timeline, but looks like he's going to be out for a while. We'll chat about the changes at Congress as well. The ball will now be moved forward 30 metres for descent. It's going to come in for the league finals. Tom Ryan was saying on Monday that basically they didn't want to rush this, and for referees maybe to make a mess of it early on, he wants to give them time. And the All-Ireland Premier quarterfinals will be no more in 2027. Leash's motion was carried, so they've now been removed. Before we dig into the games themselves, Skell, the Darragh Donovan injury, is this a nasty one, the AC joint?
It's a tough one, especially in today's game where it's so, you know, it's like a war out there, to say that. I mean, in a good way, in the sense that his position is very, very intense. It's very physical. You know, it's multi-directional, which means he can get hit from any angle and not be prepped for it. So to get back from that injury is going to take a bit of time. Now, I don't know the exact extent of it. We haven't got full news as of yet, as far as I'm aware. No. So, but you're looking at, you know, anything from minimum to, if it's minor, 6-weeker, or if it's serious, you could be requiring an operation and you're heading into multiple months. But in the same breath, I do remember, help me out, gentlemen, was it Conor Cleary, the Clare fullback, that got injured? Was it last year or the previous? Yeah. He popped his shoulder.
He dislocated it, didn't he?
He popped his shoulder, and I was certain that having had that injury, there was no way the man could feature. And I was wrong. He featured, so as it can be done with it, but it's not a nice one to have to get through.
Yeah, like, how much of a blow is this, Murph? Is it softened a little bit by the fact that Kyle Hayes is now back and has played at 6, so Willow Dunn, who can step back in the midfield, you put Adam English beside him? Or is Darragh Donovan still a big loss for Limerick?
I suppose the fact that Darragh Donovan has been injured over the last couple of years, so they've had to operate without him anyway, so they kind of know that they have lads to go through that area. It's tough for Darragh Donovan. Like, I did the AC joint a few years ago as well. The thing about the AC joint is that when it's 90% right and you have a bit of confidence in it and you're thinking, oh, this is great now, and you go, you suddenly puck a ball and it drops again and you go, ah, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, you literally has to come back to 100% right before you can even go out. And even at 100%, you have it strapped up. I think it's very frustrating for him. Like, he's had his injuries, like I said, over the last 2 years, seems to be kind of constantly injured. Just getting back in terms of constantly playing now at the moment, and in a match that they were out the gate, you know, no offense, Offaly, it was closer than I think a lot of us thought it was going to be. But, you know, I suppose if it was a league final, if it was a Munster semi-final or, you know, whatever you want to call it, you'd be going, okay, he's up to pick up an injury. But now potentially missing Munster with this injury, it's very frustrating because the AC joint is a tough one. So for Limerick, it's no offence to Darragh Dunlan, it's not a huge loss because they've operated without him. And Limerick have the panel that, I think, if one player, we've seen Limerick going with another earnings, like Ian Lynch, without, you know, different players, like really influential players. So they can absorb it. So for Limerick, not too bad. But I feel for that Darragh Dunlan this
week. To ask you a question as well, Murph, do you think, you know, there's been a lot of, I suppose, talk about the Limerick team, the best 15.
Mm.
Does this make John Kelly's job a little bit easier? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, the slot has opened up to a point, you know?
Well, it makes his mind up, I think, a little bit more in that Will O'Donoghue, as Will O'Callaghan has just said, slots back in towards midfield.
Don't worry, both of us got mixed up by Michael Dighton on commentary on a clip that happened on RT. So
that did actually happen.
I'm pretty sure I poked the ball in for Casey and it was all about Will O'Callaghan's passing. But anyway, go on.
Jesus, that's a good one. So you must be just, you're on the mind that weekend, whatever you were doing. But it does, yeah. It's literally a case where, like, if it's the old phrases you use, Skehelov, the embarrassment of riches that John Kiely has, and he had so many options on the table. But when one is taken off, it nearly decides your hand that, okay, well, this is the natural thing that's going to happen here. Like, he has a lot of stuff going on in terms of, will Aidan O'Connor, well, it looks like Aidan O'Connor is going to have to start at this stage, the rate he's going. Will he be under freeze? Won't he be under freeze? What will be the full-back lineup? We saw the switch around there of Mike Casey at right cornerback and Sean Finn at left cornerback the other day, which is like almost like the most you can do when you're swapping around your full-backs, give Sean Finn the opposite number. But in terms of this one, yeah, I think it kind of does. Would you say it makes it easier or just makes it more definite as to what he has to do now because Darragh Dunlan's gone?
It just felt like he had, let's say, from positions 8 through 15, so that's 8 positions, I feel like he had 10 players.
Yeah.
10 top-class players. That's 2 serious players are going to miss out. So, for example, at the weekend, Hegarty, you know.
Yeah.
Casey. Like, it's unfathomable to think that those 2 players and what they've done with Limerick over the 5 years, I'm only using them as the most recent example, that potentially they might be playing. You know, and then if you say, right, how am I going to fit Hegarty? Who am I taking out? I can't pick anyone. You know what I mean? I can't pick Tom Norris. I can't pick Aidan O'Connor or Lynch.
Yeah.
I can't take out English or Brian or Glenn. You know, it's like, it is an embarrassment of riches. And, you know, we know that they have the strongest panel nationally.
Yeah.
Again, we'll touch on it later on. Cork are coming right behind them, I have to say. They're coming right behind them with panel strength, if you like.
We'll go to the Cork-Kilkenny game in a second because that was a game of the weekend, no doubt. But, Skell, when it comes to what we've seen from Limerick so far, I see some Limerick fans are kind of making the point that maybe in a little bit, they're a little bit under the radar because they play Kilkenny and they win. And a lot of the conversation afterwards were, you know what, actually Kilkenny went to the Gaelic grounds and played reasonably well. Obviously, this was a bit of a kind of a no-win game in a way for them at the weekend. They put a big scoreline up on Offaly. People say that was the expectation against a team that are going back down to Division 1B. It was a little bit workmanlike. O'Neill and O'Brien get the goals in the second half, which gave them that bit of a buffer. But where are you at with Limerick now, given, look, they're going to play Cork this coming weekend, and they're in a reasonable position to go for the league final if they want to qualify?
Yeah. I think I myself at times, Will, I'm guilty of holding Limerick to such a high level because we've seen them produce it over and over and over again. So we know, let's say, on one side of our brain, their level is so high that when they don't produce that every day, we say, oh, something's wrong. something isn't right. Or they're training, they must be training very hard, or it must be a load issue, or it must be player, you know. If there's so many reasons we try and use, let's say, our theories to prove a fact, when in actual fact, Limerick are still Limerick. They're still flying through it. They're going about their business quietly, but they don't have the same dominating factor that we've grown accustomed to over the last number of years. And we were always concerned, I was concerned anyway at the time, that, God, was there a possibility that Limerick could stretch the margin here and leave every team in their wake? But every team has, in fairness, I won't say caught up, but we've closed the gap a bit, to be fair. You know, I don't think you see the Waterford game that result happened 2 or 3 years ago. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. It's just that the pack is closed, but in the same breath, I look at their forwards and think, geez, they're just getting stronger. You know, and I think we're ready for them to explode at some stage. And I don't know, is that going to be in the league stages or are they going to hit Munster? Because like last year's performances, you have to agree with me in saying that they kind of stumbled. They were stumbling through the performances, you know. They weren't at the same level of high-octane domination that we'd seen from the years previous. And then ultimately, the way they petered out of the championship must have been the most disappointing, I'd say, loss in John Kiely's tenure, I would say, personally speaking. So, because nobody expected it, even themselves. I thought from Limerick last year, they were probably mentally off it a bit. And so it looks like this year that they're looking to correct. So I don't care if you don't put 50 points in Offaly or you put 219, it's all the one, get through the victory. And like, I think they play Cork. I think are Cork guaranteed league final place? I feel like they are.
Basically, as long as they avoid defeat against Offaly, who are already relegated in the last game, they're definitely in the league final.
But so correct me if I'm wrong now, sorry. So Cork and Limerick are 1 and 2. I know I jumped onto a permutation situation here. Mm-hmm. And you've got Galway, Kilkenny, Waterford and Tip all on 4. So yep. In the head-to-head, Cork have Kilkenny and they have Tip and they have Waterford. So, and they've got Galway, obviously. So they have the 4 teams. They've got Galway as well. So
that's a good point. Yeah, they're going to the final.
So they can't get beaten. They can't get overtaken. Isn't that right, though? Because no matter what happens, two of those 4 teams, you'd imagine, will get 2 extra points this weekend, bring them to 6. So let's just say, in theory, Galway beat Kilkenny, and who were Tip playing? Tip are playing Waterford. Tip play Waterford, and they go to 6 each. So even if they win the last games, they're still not in the final because Cork have the head-to-head. Isn't that right?
That's a good point. Yeah, so they're in the final. Cork 8 points. Final, yeah. Like, 8 points is always going to get to the final anyway.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I veered off there, Will. Apologies.
No. And look, the reality is, by the way, they're not going to finish on 8 points. So they will pick up a draw or a win in their last game, even if they don't beat Limerick this weekend.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Cork, this is now 9 wins in a row, I think, in the league. So like Murph, they're not letting up. Like Alan Connolly's quote, I was saying it there in the intro, like he said, look, we're winning, and we're going to keep on winning. Like that is the Cork attitude right now. They're not, like, they do not seem to be, because it was this feeling, maybe they won the league last year, so maybe it's not such a concern. And maybe it's later in the year than you think about. Like Ben O'Connor's Cork have just decided we are going to go win after win after win here.
Yeah, it feels to me that they have really looked at what's their needs, like mentally upstairs, what's their needs in terms of focus. And we often talk about momentum, like momentum in any sport in terms of winning. Once you get it and you have a feel good factor, etc., you want to hold on to it. But I think, like, I was reflecting on this in terms of, we don't often hear other teams speaking like that, like Limerick speaking a different way. When Limerick were really on a roll, they weren't speaking like that. They were talking about more like, oh, we love the journey and we love this and we love, you know, the pressure is a privilege. That was a line we hear out. Then we don't hear that from Clare as well. And the reason I think that is because, like, each county has to kind of tailor emotionally. This is kind of tapping into the emotional side of it. You have to tailor your needs emotionally to what way you're going to approach the year. And like, if you look back, let's say Cork and Clare All-Ireland Final 2024, like me and you, Will, we picked Clare in that final, even though Cork had just turned over Limerick. We picked Clare because we felt Clare were a type of team that, regardless who they play, they could just fit the mould to get the win on a certain day. I never really got that impression from Cork. Like, over the last few years, for me, if I was to describe Cork, it was when people write them off, they were extremely dangerous and really got up for a game and performed unbelievable. When they were the favourites out and out, and I'm not tapping back to the All-Ireland final on this, but when they were out and out favourites, they sometimes struggled with that tag. So with Ben O'Connor in now, I really get the feeling where he's like, lads, this is very simple. We're not, you know, we're not aiming to peak. We're aiming to win every single match. And something I thought that was really impressive against Kilkenny was those players. Like, I saw Tommy O'Connell last year in the All-Ireland final. They called him down and they sent him back up into the stand a few times. He wanted to be involved and was, what stage was he going to come on? And then eventually it was a little bit too late and they brought him on. He starts at the weekend and, you know, really puts the hand up for a jersey. Plenty of lads as well. There was a huge appetite. There was a huge hunger. Because there's a change in the guard with the management, I think a lot of players see that opportunity at the moment. But also now there's a new message, I think, in the dressing room for Ben O'Connor. It's quite obviously, like, I mean, Jesus, he was decapitating journalists there in the first week in his post match. Like, he's just very much coming out saying, we're going to win it. He even said about coming out to Nolan Park, was it 2 weeks ago? Or 3 weeks they've been off for now. He was saying, like, listen, we're going down. We're going to go down and try and win that match. Quite often we don't see managers saying that. We say, like, you know, we're going to go down, we're going to see the performance, et cetera, et cetera. But Ben O'Connor's messaging is in line with Alan Collins. Alan Connolly's messaging, and their performances are matching it on the field. So it just seems a bit, they have a very simple message at the moment. They're playing very directly, and it is that case of her going, we're playing the next match, we want to win that next match, and then if the next match happens to be a league final or an All-Ireland semi-final, we want to win it, and that's it. And I think it's a really good message for them.
Yeah, like I kind of wonder as well, Skell, whether this is a case of Alan Connolly is just shooting from the hip and being honest with what he said on TG Carr at the weekend. That surely is the feeling within the camp anyway. Like, this whole idea I find is that when players come out and play it down and go, ooh, well, you know, I've got a big game next weekend and we're not thinking too far ahead and we don't want to think too much about what could happen later on in the season. Mm-hmm. The reality is for them in the camp, they're like, well, we want to win the All-Ireland this year and we'd like to win Munster, we'd like to win the league as well. That would be what Cork are thinking anyway.
Oh, completely. I agree with the way Murph said about Limerick. Their language was very telling, I thought, when Limerick were going really well. But they were allowed to use that type of language where they approached every interview with a huge degree of humility because they were dominating everyone. They didn't need to say anything. Yeah. They didn't need to say, we know we're going to win this match. We don't. They approached it from a position of supreme humility, and that was them all. That was Burns, Hannon, Lynch. When they all spoke, they spoke on the... It's obvious that they were, I won't say coached well, but they were given pointers on how to conduct these interviews post-match, particularly post-match because, intention is high, adrenaline's pumping, etc. But so from that position, you say, yeah, Limerick were allowed that. Cork can't use that at the minute, right? Because Cork have won their Ireland. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But they can't use that specific language. They have to use more of a battle-orientated language. And I read somewhere, more than yourself, more reflecting on social media, I saw somewhere after the interview with TG Carr where some person, it won't come to me, was nearly accusing Ben O'Connor of providing an act, that it was like a nearly charade. For every interview now is he's acting this way so that the team embodies his demeanour. You would be for certain, having come across being underage as well, this is not an act. That's his way. That's his manner. That's the way he's going to do things, right? He approaches things with ferocity. So I think I like to see the Cork people say, do you know what? I'm putting my neck on the line here. I'm going to say we're going to win every single game we're going to play and we're going to go for it. And he say, do you know what? Dead right. Go for it. Yeah. And maybe it's the power of manifestation. I don't know. Maybe you just keep saying to yourself, don't be focusing on what happened in the second half because everyone else nationally will do that for you. Yeah, as a group there, as a group of 40 players, recognize your challenge, which we know the potential is massive. But potential only gets you so far. Ultimately, you have to act on that potential. And they didn't see it out through. So their best players last year, who we had lined up for another year, didn't perform at the high point last year in the early final second half. And I just feel like those guys in particular are saying, screw it. We're going for it. Do you know what I mean? And if they don't get there, fair enough, right? They'll take a bit of flack for it because of the language they're using, but if they get there, sure, it'll all be justified. But it's a long way ahead. Like the Ireland final is, to me, is years away. In terms of time, there's a lot of hurling to do, a lot of challenges and a lot of back and forths to go. He's going to listen to.
It's funny though, I don't know which one he said it there about Alan Connolly firing from the hip, that you were either surprised. Was it you, Skehill, just said it there? You were surprised, maybe, or was you, Will? Yeah, they were surprised. But could you imagine if Alan Connolly went out and was firing from the hip, and then, like, how would Ben O'Connor pull him? How would Ben O'Connor bring out? So, what are you doing firing from the hip? And Connolly just look at him and go, sorry, you've been on a rampage for the last 4 weeks. Like, it'd be one thing if, like, Brian Cody said to me, going, oh, relax. And you go, okay, that's fine. You're not a big interview man. That's fine. Yeah. But when your manager's out doing it, he can't give you a rap on the knuckles. Or maybe he just says, look, leave that to me. That's exactly it. Yeah. I think there's an element of accountability with it as well. Like, because, again, it's horses for courses. This, you wouldn't apply this to every single team. But at the same time, I think maybe one of the ways that Ben O'Connor, as you said, Skehill, like, this apparently, I don't know him, so this apparently is like very much how he speaks. This is not an act, this is how he speaks. But if you're publicly saying, no, we want to win the next match and that's it, and it's out there and the Cork players are saying it, they're nearly accountable to it then, because it's a case that if you're saying it publicly, it's not a case that you're shying away and you're protecting the players and you're accountable now. You're saying, we want to do X, Y, and Z. And if you don't do it, you have to answer for it. So I think that in itself gives great clarity of mind that you're saying. And then as well, if you lose, you get to turn around and say, we wanted to win that match. We said we wanted to win it. We lost it. So we're very disappointed. And now we're going to push forward.
Do you think, Murph, this is what I think now, personally speaking, right? I think indirectly what they're trying to do is self-create a pressure situation early in the season. So self-create it, make it become the normality, you know?
Yeah.
And get through it, the lad says. So if they're used to putting pressure on themselves by saying, we're going to win every game, playing against high-level opposition, and they come through it, it's nearly a method of justification.
Yeah, some
teams are always in about, we want to perform. In Cork's mindset at this moment in time, we've performed plenty of times before, but when the pressure came on, we didn't perform to the level we wanted to. So,
yeah, that's exactly the point, I think it is, because when a lot of people talk about, like, let's say, even the bullshit stuff of they think something happened at halftime last year, I think this is the point that really it came down to, was the pressure of seeing out the match in the All-Ireland final. And, you know, maybe tactical things from the sideline, you can say what you want, but maybe this is the exercise that strengthens their mind in terms of, you know, nailing your colours to the mast saying, we're going to win this match, and then going out and actually achieving it. Because invariably, if they want to win in All-Ireland, they'll have to revisit this situation of where, you know, they play Team X in the All-Ireland final, and to go ahead by 4 or 5 points, have they addressed the issue that they faltered with last year? Well, maybe this is their way of addressing it, by just coming out and saying, we want to win every match, put ourselves under that pressure. And when you achieve it, you realise, well, actually, we're good enough to win every single match. So if we do get to an All-Ireland final, there's no reason to think that what happened last year will come up.
Let's talk about Cork Kilkenny. But before we do that, on my phone, I managed to find that clip from the Limerick game where I kind of slipped into the commentary by mistake. So indulge me for a second if this works.
Peter Casey. He was almost in slow motion, but the magic was just there. He just waiting for it to happen. That's just a thing of beauty.
It's beautiful, but look where it came from. Dan Morrissey looking up, picking out Willow Callan for a fullback to be able to do that with a 50-yard pass straight into his hand. And he lobbed a little ball over the top to Casey making the move. And that's just a lovely score again.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
That is brilliant. And do you know the thing is, do you know what I feel that that's wasted with? Is, do you know the way lots of sporting shows have like an introduction where there's all these clips going, oh, he went absolutely mad. There's all snippets from like mad conversations they've had. Like, that's made for that, where Michael Dignan says, and Will O'Callaghan feeds Peter Casey. And people are like, what is the context of that? What is he talking about? That's brilliant.
I do like that Marty Morrissey didn't correct him in any way. He just kind of kept going.
No. Marty Morrissey was too worried extending the season there. He was getting his line ready for that one. So,
we'll get to that. That vote should have happened, by the way. That was the one thing about Congress last weekend. So I was, the GA nerd that I am, I was glued to Congress on Saturday particularly. And I was waiting to see what would happen, because oftentimes you know that a motion is doomed before it even gets to the floor. And that motion was in big, big trouble before it got there, because counties had come out. I think Paul Bellew, the Galway chairman, was kind of front and centre, very much making the points, using the facts and figures about, particularly in dual counties, it would be impossible for them to run a meaningful games programme if they lost 2 to 3 weeks of the season, if we were to move the All-Ireland finals back into August. When Pádraig Duffy, the former director general of the GAA, got up, he basically said, I am fighting a beaten docket here before I even speak. And then they didn't have the vote. Now, the unfortunate thing about when they withdraw a motion, and similarly the Clontarf motion about players having to play a certain amount of games for their club before they could play inter-county, is that if you don't actually get the vote, you don't find out how much of an appetite is actually there for it. And I have a feeling, particularly based on the GPA one, which was to keep the season at 30 weeks, so pre-season's probably gone again, by the way, given that was very strongly voted in, I have a feeling, Scale, that if this had actually gone to the floor, this would have been hammered. And maybe that would have been the end of the debate, where we're not watching the TV coverage, where Don Logue, as he said on Sunday, went, it's a microwave season, we need to extend the season out, it needs some space to breathe. If that had actually been roundly rejected by the delegates on Saturday, we wouldn't be having that conversation again.
Yeah, but I think that was a strategic thing to do on their behalf, because if you use percentage terms at the minute, if you think you're 50-50, you're unlimited. You're going to go just to see, you know, if we can push it through with the final hour. If you think you're 60-40, you'd be tempted to say no. If you're 80-20, you're pulling it completely. So I feel like that the way the public were, I suppose, being informed was quite enough to have to say. Only a couple of counties came out publicly the week previous before Congress. I thought a lot more would come out publicly, but there must have been something happening in that room, Will, to put the percentages into 90-10 or 80-20. Otherwise, you know, you don't pull it, because pulling it has, I don't mean this to use the word badly, has a much lower level of embarrassment than if you get hammered by 90%.
Totally. It means you can come back to it again. So like you turn around, you wait and see if the temperature on this changes a bit in the next year or two, and nobody can turn around and say, well, actually, back in 2026 at Congress, this got hammered. Someone could turn around now in 2 years' time if they decide to pitch this again and go, well, actually, it never got to a vote.
Yeah.
The damage was never done from that point of view. Like, it's one of those, I'm kind of sick of it at this stage, Murph, for hearing about it. But then again, I am very mindful that when I was tweeting the results of some of the different votes, straight away people were saying, oh, we need August finals back. We need to put minor finals, which again, this was voted down, the idea of putting the minor finals back with the senior. And again, it was a very strong majority. I think it was over 80% that voted not to put them back and couple them again. And yet straight away people say, why aren't the under 20 and minor finals together? We need the minor finals back with the seniors. There are still people who think very differently to us, Murph.
Yeah, but I haven't heard any counties, and I'm not saying they haven't, but I haven't heard any counties hugely supportive of, the one we're talking about, pushing the finals back. And for me, I think for county boards, it's a logistical point of view. Like, it is... I'm not going to say catastrophic, but how counties would manage that if they pushed it back another 2 weeks with how tight it is. Like Donal Logue, what he was saying on the Sunday game the other night was he wanted to let the game breathe. That was the phrase he was using. And I've had plenty of conversations with Donal Logue, and he's great opinions on lots of things. But I found it ironic that he was saying let the game breathe, because he would suffocate the club game. Like at the moment, in Kilkenny, to give our example, and people will look at us and say, okay, you know, we're not fielding an intercounty football team at Sam Maguire level or whatever, but we play our football off at the moment. And our team was knocked out of the All-Ireland semi-finals in June, July. It was still a tight run-in for us to get off our club championships. And that meant playing week on week at times. And like, even during that period, it was very tight for players. If you picked up injuries, you were gone for the championship. And then even from the point of view, to push it out even further, if you go to Club All-Irelands, like we played Club All-Irelands semi-final this year against Upper Tyr Siombán on the winter solstice, shortest day of the year, 21st of December, we're eating a Christmas dinner 4 days later. And that's what the club players are doing at the moment. So from that point of view, and club players aren't giving out at the moment. They're just saying, okay, this is what we're doing, grand. But if you want to take more time off them, what are you doing to the club player? And as an intercounty player, as Ms. Evan Scahill can say, we were part of the 1%, less than the 1% that played intercounty. Mm-hmm. You're catering for the less than 1% here to disenfranchise the more than 99% or 99%, whatever the, but the stat is around that. I just find it remarkable. Like if you were in any sport and you were saying, we need to grow the sport, we need to enhance it, you'd be asking yourself, well, what's good for the 99%, not for the 1%? So there's so many elements here. To go back to your point about the minor finals as well, Will, I think a lot of this more is aspirational. I think people are thinking with a bit of nostalgia. You know, you look back and things, you're like, Jesus, they were the good days. And you know, it's a case, was it really a good day? Like the minors playing in Croke Park before the All-Ireland final, it's great that they get to play in Croke Park, but I think we've seen really good reasons as to why they should be standalone. Like the Offaly Tipperary match we saw in Nolan Park a few years ago, probably the greatest minor final I've seen in terms of a spectacle. Like there's so many elements there of and I think Offaly, would it be right in saying Offaly, how many did Offaly play in, Will? There was a few there anyway, and
Tip Kilkenny had a massive crowd as well. Like I think these standalone finals have actually meant the people in the counties are able to get their hands on the tickets. Like you can imagine what the scramble would have been like, particularly because we're in the middle of, say, you know, Limerick mania. And last year you would have had Cork mania when it came to people trying to get tickets for the All-Ireland senior final. And then if it's a couple of different teams who get to the All-Ireland minor final, good luck trying to get your hands on tickets. And I think, unfortunately, unless the teams in the minor final are the same as the teams who are in the senior final,
that's it.
I've been at many an All-Ireland final where there was a tiny crowd in watching the minor final. You know, nostalgia is a strange thing. We look at things through a slightly distorted lens where I think people try to remember 80,000 people were sitting there during the minor final cheering these kids on, when the reality is that most people going to the senior final were still in the pub at that
point. We were there. I didn't make
the minor finals, but remember being at them.
I can tell you, we played Cork in 2000, or sorry, excuse me, Galway were playing Cork in 2005, and we were playing Limerick prior. And so we have Galway who are in the senior and the minor, and there wasn't that big of a crowd in for us. That didn't stay in the minor. So and I do believe as well, sometimes we're guilty of thinking what we have is worse than what we had. But I think it all started off with Offaly and Laois in the Leinster minor final and go back in like 2022 or 2021. Do you remember that crowd in Port Laois that Friday evening? That was a full house, as the dad says. Dinner graduated to our two said Murph, the minor final, Offaly and Tip, and then Offaly played Cork in the 20 final below in Thurles. We played Clare the same day. Packed crowds, right? There's no way you reenact those type of crowds with under the senior games. So I think the minor and under-20 competitions have taken on a much more positive role in the GAA calendar than when they were, you know, I call them the lesser competitions back in the senior, you know, evaluation days, you want to call it. So I just think what we have at the minute is actually better than what we had. So
yeah, I'd agree with you from the point of view, and Will made the point there of if the teams are different in the minor final to the senior final, that's a disaster for the minors, because there was a few years there when I would have been maybe 15 or 16, and you were going and Kilkenny were playing in the final or in semi-final, and the minor was on before, and we had a really good Kilkenny team at the time, like Cha Fitz and all these boys were in it. So they're competing, and you just kind of assume that they would always compete. But let's say you had a Limerick Clare All Ireland final and Offaly and Cork were in the minor. Like, the tickets are €100, first of all. How many of the younger lads, like, what the minors want to see is a crowd that's there for them. Like, you want to win the All-Ireland final, first of all. But, like, you want, first of all, the lads you're going to school with and all that. You want those people to come along and you want your families. Well, the lads you go to school with, will they come? And if they are there, they're going to be drowned out on Hill 16 by any sort of a bigger crowd that's going to be there. Everything about it, I just think, if you're actually really intent on being what's good for the minors, do what we're doing now. There's a reason we're where we are. And if this was defeated at the weekend, or sorry, if this was supported at the weekend, bring it back, I would have just said, look, I'm wrong. I don't feel as strongly on this one as I do with the split season that Don Logue was saying. But I'd happily say if I entered a debate with someone and someone gave really good reasons, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm actually wrong on this one. But I do think what we have at the moment, it's proven more fruitful than what we had previously. And for all the reasons that we've all just mentioned there.
Yeah,
but absolutely. Do you not think as well, I just think the focus point of this extending the season, they keep using the game, the health of the game, right, as the primary focus point. So the game has been in good health at the top level counties for the last number of years, right? And there's no signs that ever changing, to be fair. You know, like, that's why we get such a good story. Like, and that's, at the moment, it's a story, right, with Kildare, so, you know, being competitive, you could say, in Division 1B, right? But we need more Kildare's. We need Meath to be strong, Derry, Down, all these teams. But that's not changing, so I don't think the focus should be on extending the intercounty senior season, let's say, just for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. That's not going to make a huge national difference.
It won't.
Go get boots on the ground. Get boots on the ground. Get major. Put your money where your mouth is. Get invested into the counties that have, I would say, football dominating. I'd be straight about that.
Mm.
Like, there's only one county in my knowledge, and that's your own, Murph, let's say, right, where, you know, you've been attacked, I'd say, from a hurling perspective, for not facilitating football more. You do facilitate football, right? But in those other counties, as you said, as we mentioned before, loads of football counties don't facilitate hurling to the same level. So
yeah.
I just think the focus, forget about the senior season, put it in the clubs, schools. We've had this conversation multiple times. I feel like this is our fourth or fifth season, I forget at this stage. But we've definitely covered this topic 5 times, at least. So there
one, is. One thing that I do agree with Don Logue on is that Derek Kent now possibly could, because Gaelic football has now been quote-unquote sorted with the Football Review Committee, there is a possibility now to put a focus on hurling during the next few years of his presidency. The only thing is, you need to have genuine markers about how they're going to do this. So, like, I agree with Don Logue to an extent, which is that, and we said this at the time, we've had him on the pod, that Willie Maher has so wide a brief at the moment that it's almost impossible. And I was listening to Johnny Greville, the Meath manager, speaking a few weeks ago about this, and he was saying that he kind of felt that in a way some counties like Meath get a little bit lost when it comes to hurling development, because what happens is the focus is on trying to get helmets and gear to places that don't have clubs, trying to set new clubs up. You almost in a way try and build from the bottom up, and therefore the teams who are in the middle maybe don't get the supports which they require, whether they be financial, whether they be whatever else. And I think there is a possibility for Derek Kent now coming in to maybe put a focus onto this. And to be fair to Charlotte Burns, and Joanne said this on League Sunday at the weekend, it was him who appointed Willie Maher. It was him who put this Hurling Development Committee in place. But I think a little bit of extra support around him would be no harm, Murph, either. Like, one man and road shows and whatever else can do a certain amount, but it's impossible for him to fix everything about hurling in one go.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I've spoke to Willie Maher myself, like, outside of being on the pod here, and like, I was really, you know, I was delighted when I spoke to him. I was like, this fella has huge energy for this job and he's great ideas and like, really is the right man for the job. But you still have to say that, Jesus, you know, he's still only one man at the same time, and he's covering a lot of ground. He's trying to get around, he's trying to do a lot of his work from Dublin, which is obviously, you know, where he can be centralised and get the most amount of work done. But he's also getting out and about. He's done a lot of road shows as well. But I'd agree with you, like, you know, he does need more support. You can't expect one man to fully just, you know, turn the tide altogether. He might put the maybe foundations in place. And if he did that during his tenure, I'd consider that a success, whereby the foundations are in place and it's starting to head in the right direction. But the idea that maybe some people think that he's going to overhaul the whole thing in, I don't know how long he's in, for 3 to 5 years, I'd imagine it would be the expectancy for it. I wouldn't expect any man to do that. No, I'd absolutely love if he proved me wrong, but it's a very tough thing. Like, the more support Willie Maher has to support the great ideas and the enthusiasm he has, we're doing ourselves a great service if we just gave him that more support.
Let's see what Derek Kent does. He was obviously voted in with a very strong majority at the weekend as well, and we wish him well when he takes up the role in a year's time. Now, the Hurling Pod and Off the Ball is with Apple Green, helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. As I mentioned at the start, Cork's first win at Nolan Park since 1987 in the regular section of the league. I thought they were pretty impressive, Skell, to be honest. There was obviously the massive goal threat there. Got an early goal. Brian Hayes, Barry Walsh, Alan Walsh all hitting the net. Probably should have been a little bit more comfortable in the finish. Like, Alan Connolly missed that penalty, which is well saved by Tallis. Mm-hmm. And also they missed a few other chances. Then when Owen Cody gets the goal, it comes back to a point late on in the match, and Cork were kind of able to just hold on at the end of the game to win it. But to me, this is maybe more comfortable than the final scoreline suggested.
Yeah, just when you use the term energy hold on, I was going to pull you up and say, Jesus, I didn't feel like that to me now.
No, you know what I mean, though. When it was down to 1 point, they had to close it out.
They saw it out, should I say. I always felt Cork could control this game, to be honest with you. Regardless of venue or the crowd. First of all, they came with a big crowd, which I was very surprised with. It felt like they outnumbered Kilkenny-Murph as well in the stands, but maybe just because they're boisterous. But they just have a level of confidence right now that they can bring in some new players. Again, guys I haven't heard of. Like we know about William Buckley. He was the most recent guy we started talking about, 4 weeks ago. Now there's Barry Walsh and Hugh O'Connor. They're just adding to the mix already. So they have a plethora of options. And it goes back to the point I was raising earlier on about the panel in depth. And, if you've got, I know I'm rehashing old ground, but if Ben O'Connor is saying we're going to win every game, it puts a focus on every game so that when the younger players come in, there can be no illusions. This is full duck or no dinner, my friend. We're going to win this game. So they just felt like, I thought they defended fierce well. I think Kilkenny got one quarter. I think Kilkenny got 1-8. Kinney got 7 points from free. So 1-8 from play, let's say, which it's a low tally, you have to say. Like, regardless of the time of year or the pitch conditions or where, it's a low tally. And the Cork defended very well. I'd have been critical of Cork's defending mechanism, let's say, in years previous, but just they seem to have well settled. Even with the introduction of new goalie, fullback seems to be staying there. O'Leary, I was surprised at that. I thought that was a move that I was questioning at the start of the year, because I put more interest on who's playing where and what changes our managers going making from the year previous to try to get an extra percent. So moving the two big lads, the Twin Towers, out to the half back line seems to be something that's going to stay. But look, I just think Cork were good. They have a huge degree of lethality in their forwards that is so hard to marshal. And it's a matchups nightmare, I have to say. Like, you've got great man markers in Kilkenny, let's say, between Mikey Butler, say Mikey Carey too. But if you keep moving players, like if you've Alan Connolly in there and Brian Hayes, and then you add in Walsh, and they're all high ball threats. It's a matchup nightmare, And they can play with three men up top or two men up top. They play with ferocious pace. They can attack from deep. It's just they have an awful lot of strings to the bow at the minute. And I have to say, only for the Kilkenny goalie, Tallis, I thought he was, personally speaking, I thought he was excellent. I'm interested to get your view on it, Morph, how it's been interpreted down Kilkenny. Tallis is getting a run of games, and is there potential that he sees championship time? Over to you, bud.
He's getting quite a bit of time. I think at the moment, particularly this weekend, my understanding was Omar, if he was injured. I know Derek, I suppose I got the impression, was eager to have a look at Tallis anyway, in particular. It's something we haven't really seen in Kilkenny over the last few years. Like, Darren Brennan was there, and we've seen plenty of lads kind of, I suppose, being the number two to Owen Murphy. And I got the impression this year that obviously he wanted to see Aidan Tallis. Aidan Tallis has proved himself. Like, there was great saves there at the weekend. Probably had the save of the match there. I'm thinking, was it Darragh Fitzgibbons won in the first half? Yes. That was everything about that. Like, Darragh Fitzgibbon did everything right there, and it was a great save. And Tallis is an outstanding goalkeeper. I get the impression that possibly they were rotating keepers, and that Owen Murphy just happened to be injured this weekend, that he was probably going to play. I don't think it's as strong as a case of where Lingers is just going with Aidan Tallis hell or high water. I still feel that Owen Murphy is going to be starting the championship, because it's just the thing that I haven't seen Owen's standards drop away from going, we need to look at someone else. And the thing is, like, you know, in my time when I was there, Darren Brennan, I've said to you previously, outstanding goalkeeper, absolutely incredible. And if he was there at another time, he was Kilkenny number one. It's just that Owen was setting such high standards. It's great competition to have. The fact that, you know, if Owen decided to step away over the next while, Aidan Tallis looks like a ready fit replacement for him and is hurling outstanding and is ticking lots of boxes. But I still just feel that, you know, come championship, when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of picking who's going to be the number one, I still, and that's still the feeling in Kilkenny. But Aidan Tallis is doing a lot of things right, and I have to give him full credit because he's a great player. He's a great outfield player as well. He's been great for Liz Downey over the years as well. But he had a mighty game at the weekend, and I would say very similar to Billy Nolan for Waterford, that only for the two of them, possibly the scoreline was going to be a bit bigger for the losing team at the weekend. So no, full credit to him, but I'd say at the moment there's not a general consensus that this is going to be number one for Kilkenny. It's hard to say that when Owen Murphy's still in the equation, you know.
The plight of the second goalkeeper is a very difficult thing as well, Skell, because you can be going really, really well, and if you've got someone like Owen Murphy, who's been the dominant force for over a decade for Kilkenny in goal, has picked up multiple All-Stars, has done nothing wrong, you can be playing really well, but actually trying to dislodge him is almost impossible.
Oh yeah, completely. Like, I mean, she's trying to, that's the thing, and it's and Skell is probably a better lad to speak about this. I've already jumped across him there, but the thing of, like, unlike any other position on the field, goalkeeper is just absolutely, if a lad is going well, you nearly don't, it's probably the one position, I'd say that and full back, where if it's not broke, don't fix it. If it's going well, brilliant. And I'm not saying that from a point of view that you're conservative in your mind and how do you pick your goalkeeper, but if a lad is in goal and he's tried and tested and it's going well, you're less likely to fidget with that, I would say. But Skell, you would obviously know more.
Absolutely. See, it's like, is it a high risk? Absolutely. Is the reward high if you change the goalie? No, the reward is actually low What you have in the moment, like Owen Murphy to me, and there's no slight, and I've watched them all, let's say for the last 40 years, you could say, is the best goalkeeper I've ever seen. You know what I mean? So like when you have that and you're second choice against him, like you, in fairness, you have no hope, right? You have no hope. Right? So your job then becomes different, Murphy. It becomes different. It's not about you trying to get on the team anymore. It's about you training as hard as you can in conjunction with Murph to get his levels to the highest possible level, you know, that he can possibly achieve, right? Mm-hmm. So then you become a lot more, I would say, selfless. You become more of a team-focused person to try and push that man as hard and as fast as I can so that come July in the finals, let's say, he can produce his top goods. That's what it's about. And it's a very hard position. And it takes a certain kind of person to be able to occupy that position, because whatever goalkeeper you're talking about, he or she is coming from, you know, the top level of their club, to be fair. And they probably played top level in college or school, whatever you want to call it, and probably played all the underage competitions for the likes of their country teams all the way up along, 14, 16 minors, etc. And now they get to the senior position, and then suddenly that's it. That's like the end of their intercounty career. So it's a hard place to be, but I would always class it as a very important place. You know, that it's your job is to push, and see where the year takes you both. And I bet you if you ask Owen Murphy his opinion of, you were saying about Brennan there a moment ago, you know, I bet you'd have a very high opinion of him as a person.
Oh, yeah.
Because Brennan went about his business in a very workmanlike form and trained hard and facilitated and getting Murphy's levels up. So there'd never be in those positions. You could never have animosity between them, to be honest. But I think that there's like a yin and yang relationship. Right? If you have a good number 16 and a number 32 or whatever it is, and they're pushing hard for number one, everybody wins. Like, I'm talking collectively. You know, everybody wins. So that's why it's important. Tough will, but important.
We had PFSKN8567. What a name on YouTube last week. Paul Murphy, who contested the semi-final in KK the last few years? Where are the representatives of these teams? Nobody from Mullinavat. Fishing in a small pond, you get small fish. Well, Lachlan Gales are overrepresented. I think it's a statement, which I've put to Murph.
No, it's like, I mean, I certainly wouldn't be looking at the Kilkenny team going, there's lads, I know there's lads in Kilkenny who were asked in, they cast the net far and wide this year. And like some people actually were going, God, is that, I think they looked at 70 players in terms of actually brought them in to Dunmore and trained and had matches and Welsh Cup and all these things. And some people actually raised the point of was that too many players to bring in. You know, not, you know, just kind of as a point note, years ago it used to be maybe you'd have 40, 45, so up to 70 now. And other counties I've heard have had more. Kilkenny cast the net far and wide. Some lads that I saw coming in, if you asked me what club they were, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't look at it strictly from the point of view. Mullinavat have been unbelievably consistent in Kilkenny since about 2017 or 18. They've just consistently kept... So Mullivatta be a dual club. They're the senior football champions, and they consistently perform really well on both sides. The likes of John Walsh would have been in with Kilkenny over the years, Pádraig Gann and a few of these lads. Tom Elward would have been hurling with me. So when there was individuals to be called in, they were called in. I wouldn't look at that from the point of view of go, look at the four teams that are in the semi-final. I remember years ago in Kilkenny, I think it was 1986 or 84 or something, there was a club, Muckalee. They won the county final. They had no representative in the county. They just happened to have a really good team, but they had no representative on the county panel. So I'd never look at it from the point of view that, oh, the four county final or the county semi-final teams, oh, they should all have eight players, six players, four players in with the county. It doesn't work like that at all. And also the other side is, what you don't know in these conversations, people don't look at, I personally know of two players, if not three, that turned it down this year. They were asked to go in, I'm not saying from all of that, but from my own club, from other clubs, they were asked to go in and they said, look, at you know, at the moment I have X, Y, and Z going on, work, travel, whatever. They're not going in. So there's a lot of things at play here where you go, well, these players aren't being represented. Look at Liam Moore. Liam Moore is brought in. He was at the Borough, got to a county semi-final, been brought in. Shorthall was brought in as well with Ballyhale this year. Other notable forwards, Ballyhale, Shorthall heard well, in he comes. So, no, I wouldn't agree with that point now.
Because your feeling is, and I know that, that Skell is interested in the amount of new players who are coming into this Kilkenny team, which we can touch on in a second, but your feeling is Derek Ling actually over the last couple of years has tried a load of lads out.
Mountain lads. Like, one of the things I would have said that, so the great thing about Ling coming in and managing was that Lingers was the under 20 manager when they won the All Ireland. So obviously, not to say would have an affinity to these players, but you know, has seen what these lads are capable of doing and would be eager to bring these lads in. The likes of Killian Doyle and these lads that we're seeing hurling really well now. He's given so many lads chances. And if you go back maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I made the point on this that the Tipperary match last year. It was brought up around the point of TJ, where Skell was asking when he'd be full forward. The point was that at times where he played, let's say, two newer lads with TJ at full forward, TJ was lad performing. The other lads maybe weren't getting traction. They weren't making the ball stick. They weren't having the impact on the game. But Derek was trying these lads. And at the moment, at the weekend, he trialed plenty of lads. But then there's some people maybe looking at other players, maybe players from their own club, maybe from whoever. But the spread of new lads that he's brought in and given chances. I mean, as a player who's gone through the system like that, there's players getting more chances now at the moment because of the nature that there's so many games with the round robin of the league and with the Welsh Cup. There's lads getting a huge amount of games, and I really think he's leaned into that. That it certainly wouldn't be one thing I'd be critical of Derek Lingford. And even if you go back to our early conversation, Aidan Tallis is in the goal, Killian Doyle, Bulger, Barco, we have a heap of lads there, Liam Moore. There's so many lads that he's after bringing in that I don't think it's one thing he can be critical of. If you look at it at the weekend, even against Cork, you know, he started to bring on your John Donnellys and Tom Phelan, who's back from injury, lads who've been tried and tested. He was bringing them back on because, you know, coming down the home straight when the game was starting to slip from Kilkenny, he had to reintroduce the likes of John Donnelly and these lads to try and see out the game and still be competitive towards the end. So, you know, Ed McDermott has been playing the last few games. These are not household names. They're names that Derek is trying. So and this isn't blind, you know, defending Derek. I've no reason to sit on and defend him. It's from my point of view of looking at, Jesus, there wasn't that many vacancies going when I was trying to get into the team or other lads because there wasn't as many games that you could do that in.
Yeah, because like your feeling is, Gael, this is a team that, to use your phrase from a few weeks ago, there's kind of a massive surgery going on right now. Some of it's enforced because you get someone like, say, Hugh Lawler going away. You get injuries like Adrian Mullen's going to still be out for a little while with his thumb injury, so you have to kind of try players out. At the same time, though, like, this is a very different looking Kilkenny team in the league this year.
It is, and you know, I admire his approach, to be honest, because it takes a bit of bravery to go away from what you've been doing, let's say, and try and entrust, I would say, trust into players that, I don't mean this in a bad way, haven't been proven, you know, whether that be a club level or underage level. And I'm going through the teams there, like, and Kilkenny they've moved players around a good bit this year to try and get their best kind of set team. So, like, they've put Cody into full forward. They've put Massey, it's keeping Massey a corner forward. They've put Perry Deegan up into the half-back line. I'm wondering, was that to make room for Richie Reid? They're keeping Corcoran at six, by the looks of it. They're keeping Carey at three. They like Doyle at five, you know. So it's like he's formulating what it looks like to be his set team. As I said, three, five, and six look to be very well set. He's persistent with Blanchfield, who I would have gone accustomed with Blanchfield being the half-back line predominantly at midfield, and Blanchfield's going well. He likes Malai midfield, so do I. He's moved Kenny to 11, you know. So there's, when I say surgery, there's been a bit of surgery for guys, but in a positive manner, I have to say. you know. And I know they didn't get the result. I get that. But I just think he's trying to see what he has. You know, and I know McDermott, let's say, from Andre's level, big unit, put him out against Cork, see what he has. You know what I mean? No, he was down for a bit. More, I like more. I like to look at that lad. Sometimes you see lads, they come on the scene and you say, God, if I was in that manager's position, I'd be putting more time into that guy. Now, I don't see more from one week to next, obviously, in training, but that guy just looks to me like, to me, if you just give him a bit more confidence and a bit more time, he could be effective for the Canadian Championship. So I admire managers when they take the chance. You know, that's why I was critical of my own manager last year when we didn't take the chance, but he's doing it this year, and it's proven beneficial. You know, the younger players, right, are producing at a very good level, I think I have to say. So, Kilkenny, I think it's good news. I don't, maybe a few might disagree with me, but I think it's good news. I think Kerry 3 is decent. Corcoran at 6, I think, is very good. He's been very surprised at me. He has the cut of a lad, like, he just reminds me of a Brian Hogan type person, you know, or a Peter Barry. Those type, no, they're not left-handed, but, you know, those type of, what's the word I use up here now? I would call them Gunthers. Like, you wouldn't get through them too easy, you know? You know what I mean? Like, Gunther, you would not get through him too easy. Like, he mightn't be a hurler first. You know, he might be physicality, powerful, show up number 6. He could be hurler second. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So I think a good time for him. That's why I like Moore as well so much. And I've been accused in the last number of weeks, this is the Kilkenny podcast. It's not. I just like watching what Ling is doing, trying to introduce the new guys and see can he blend them into his championship team. That's all.
Sir.
Yeah. But we talked about Limerick for a good while. We talked about Cork. Don't worry, this is not a Kilkenny podcast. I think people, no matter what happens, right, people will always see what they want to see, or in a case, if they're listening to the audio version, they will hear what they want to hear. And they will decide, and like they'll sit with a stopwatch and go, I can't believe you only did such and such a minutes on this. How come you didn't do more on that? The ad that I heard gave more time to such and such a county. Like, no matter what, we can't win.
The one thing I had to throw out, and I agree exactly with you, to bring it back, if Cork people were unhappy, to bring it back to Cork, the Cormac O'Brien sideline, which we haven't really mentioned yet. Like, we've mentioned a lot of terms of, you know, players moving around and different things and player selection. But from a skill point of view at the weekend, I wasn't expecting that. Like, a sideline from 65 on a bad day, like, you know, which really does feed into it. There's very, you're limited in what you can do with the ball. If that's a summer day, you'll see lads curling sidelines in and everything. You can't really even do that on a wet day. But that was some sideline for 60. And is it, we call it 65. It's more than that because he was at the sideline on the 65.
Mark, how good are you with sidelines?
Useless. Do you know what I did a good few years ago? I find sidelines are one of the skills where you come and go at, in terms of if you're practicing them, which some lads don't do, if you're practicing them, you get really good very quickly at sidelines. If you went out with a bag of balls out to a field today and then went out again on, you know, Wednesday night and did it again, geez, by the weekend, you'd start fucking clipping them along. But I remember one of the weekends, couple of years ago, I started really emphasizing a few sidelines because I was like, well, if you're in the backs and you get a sideline, it might seem innocuous, but you could land it up the field 65 yards, 70. And we played someone out in Callan in Kilkenny in a club match. And I was warning lads, I was out in midfield, I was warning the lads,
push up,
going towards the end line here, like one lad towards the end line. And I remember I absolutely sent it flying out over the end line, nobody could even get near it. And I was like, well, that was no good to anybody. But I wouldn't like, if you were to give me 10 balls now at the moment, my priority would be clearing the first man. As you normally say with a sideline, clear the first man. But if that's a practice in them, they're a serious weapon. Like you went through years ago there, if we're talking about Cormac O'Brien there, I remember Gerard Farrher and Kilkenny putting two or three over, I think, one day. Kilkenny. Ridiculous. It goes through spurts where you have your Canning, you'll have your TJ, you'll have whoever else is there, lads who step up and take sidelines. Yeah, stepping them over. But like, as an asset, like if you got a sideline at cornerback and you're actually good at hitting them, you could land that ball completely out of danger down on the other half back line. So it's one of those ones, it's probably a missed skill that just could reap huge benefits. But yeah, Cormac O'Brien, outstanding skill at the weekend.
Yeah, the other thing as well, Murph, on the Cork-Kilkenny game, I enjoyed the intensity quite a bit as well. Like Cork were hunting in packs. Even if you do change some of the personnel, the system that they play doesn't change. And I saw Ray Boyne for his analysis was just saying like there were some kind of non-negotiables. And that's what we saw from Cork. We saw them hunting down Kilkenny players, getting blocks in, getting hooks in, working as a group. That was all there. I mean, it's still early in the year, but a lot of that was on show at the weekend.
Yeah, I think both teams would be happy with it. Like, my overall consensus with it was that Cork started really well, and at the start of the first 10 minutes, Kilkenny's game play was just a bit disjointed. Like, they weren't kind of clicking, they weren't moving together, striking a lot of balls in. When they were striking them long onto the D, invariably Cork had the man sitting, so they just came out with it. But then Kilkenny kind of grew into the game. Cork's game, like, even in the tight spaces on a bad day, they were so well able to move the ball. They knew what they were about. Like, you could see lads picking up the ball. You had lads dropping from the half back or half forward line midfield, dropping to take the ball off the half backs or the full back line. And I was just looking at them going, when they get the ball in the hand, before they even turn around to survey what's in front of them, they know what they want to do already, which really just shows a really good understanding of what we're about. And then when I looked at Kilkenny then, Kilkenny grew into the game, and I was actually really happy with how they were moving the ball and were snapping it around. I think, again, it's another week where we would just talk about Kilkenny wasting chances. Like, Cork were the better team in probably every area, but I was really happy with Kilkenny in lots of areas that, you know, they were working hard. Like you said, the tackling for both teams, tackling was really intense. There was lots of rucks that didn't just turn into nothing rucks. Like, lads were fighting for it. The game was played on an edge as well. And, like, I wouldn't like anybody criticising that. There was yellow cards and there was no dirty strokes to my memory in it. But it was played on that edge where I would always consider really good teams playing the sport if you're going to be successful. Like, even in particular Cork, like, if you know, there's a few snigs here and there, but I think that's the sign of a team who's really playing, pushing it on the edge, and that's a good thing to be doing. But I think the tackling was absolutely class, and Cork were fully deserving and could have won by more, but I, as a Kilkenny supporter, I'd still be taking a lot of good things from it, going, yeah, that's really good. Yes, we have to work in a good few areas here. But when I see the likes of John Donnelly and Tom Phelan, like, Tom Phelan was probably Kilkenny's best player back in the All-Ireland final in 23, has been injured pretty much since. But the likes of them coming back as well would be heartening. But obviously, Cork are in just a much better position at the moment. They look like they're really just full of energy. And, you know, it'd be very hard to look past them for taking all full points. But obviously, the big hurdle of Limerick at the moment. So that'll be the interesting one to come.
Galway against Kilkenny this coming weekend. We'll preview it on the members pod. But let's talk about this new look Galway team. We'd Kieran Hanrahan play his first game for Galway at the weekend. Yep. A lot of these kind of younger players who are coming to him, I thought he was pretty good from the clips that I saw, and all the reports are that he played very well during the game. Goals in the first half, Ronan Glennon, Colin Malloy. Galway win 218 to 16 points. Again, this is a difficult one to understand why it wasn't available to stream somewhere, at least given the implications at the bottom of the table. But the reality is, Gael, Galway have beaten Offaly, beaten Waterford, which are the two games, if you're going to fight relegation, they needed those 4 points, and over the last couple of weekends, they've delivered them.
They have, yeah. And I, to be honest, I thought we'd win the game with it, right? I didn't think we'd win it as well. And from watching this now, obviously, we only got, let's say, snippets of it, to be fair. It just looked like the Galway were always in control, you know, whether that be physically, the scoreboard, obviously, they used the conditions quite well. So being up what they were up against the Breeze in the first half was a surprise. I didn't think we'd get so much the level of contribution from the younger players than they did. Like, Jason Rabbit got the point. Like, you can't underestimate the skill of what he did to catch that ball to set up Ronan Glennon for the goal. So it goes back to what we're saying about the big man at 14. If you've got a big man at 14 who's also mobile and has that kind of soft touch, if you know what I'm saying, that he has a very, very high skill base, it becomes so lethal. Like, it becomes so lethal. So very happy with the likes of Ireland. Very happy with Colin Malloy. He's a rich good finisher, and Jason Rabbit. Not saying that's going to be our full forward line come championship day, but just it's. I used the phrase again this morning. It's adding a few more strings to our bow. It looks like we can shoot now from a lot of places where I would have questioned that over the last couple of years, where our scores going to come from, particularly from distance. So we've got Keane Daniels, a young fellow there from Tommy Larkins, coming in, and it looks like we're getting minutes into players that are going to set into positions. So Killian Traers, he's a fantastic player at number six. Like, I'd like to see him at number six. We didn't have Dahi Bourke. You mentioned Kieran Hanrahan, probably been the best cornerback. He plays there for his club as well. Like, probably been the best cornerback in Galway over the last number of years. So see him getting a chance is good. So I've only positive things to say about Galway. I've been on this podcast plenty of times, Will. I've been critical. I mean, look, they deserved it, but I'm just quietly content with what they're producing. I know they lost the first couple of games against Cork and Tip. I wouldn't say they got hammered if you look at the scoreboard, but I think we're in a good place. I think we're far better. I think we're miles and streets ahead of where we were last year. Being honest, I think we're streets ahead. Like, I still think back to that performance against Tipperary in the first round of the league last year. It was so bad, and it was so concerning that I was like, I was nearly writing off the year already. That's how bad it was, that first performance. But as I said to you, even though we lost the first couple of games this year, I still wasn't, you know, there was snippets that said, yeah, this can be done, let's say. This looks decent enough. Then you add in Nyland, and Nyland now is getting a bit of traction. He hits what he hit the other day, 4 points, I think, from play. You know, he's a shooter, and he's athletic. So you get that your young players moving and they're contributing at a high level, you know, sure, it opens up, doesn't it?
He's you know what? He's very good at making space as well. So I didn't get to chat to you last week. The Galway Offaly game where Galway played against the wind in the first half. Like, Nyland oftentimes is winning his own ball, kind of drifting out into space and getting shots away. And he was doing that against a fairly strong wind during it as well. Like, to me, he looks like a really, really good talent. We've obviously just been waiting for him to explode. But the likes of himself and Rabbit are going to get those chances now, aren't they?
Oh, completely, yeah. And they've been entrusted, like, and they're starting every game. They're playing a huge portion of the game. Nyland played 65 minutes. I think Jason played something similar. Like, so it's not as if they're only lasting a half and getting taken off because the performance isn't great. They're being entrusted to do the job, let's say. And Nyland is probably, he would have come out of this county with the highest level of potential. Probably had a bit of a stop-start year last year because he got an awful hamstring injury. So he just seems to get moving again, and he's a very fluid athlete. So, you know, he's not very one-dimensional. He can move multi-directions. He opens up space for himself very fast. Unbelievable skills. So if you're to ask a lot of the Galway public, Will, who is the man that's going to carry the fight for Galway for 10 years, you know, it's going to be Aaron Nyland, to be fair. But I think he'll be ably supported by Jason Rabbit and Rory Burke. We haven't seen Rory now going through a bit of an injury at the minute, but those three guys are going to be, let's say, the nucleus of the Galway forward line for the next decade. So getting them in now and getting them going, I think, is definitely the right decision.
Right, excited to see how they go. That puts Galway into a decent position. They've got Kilkenny at home, Limerick away in their last two games. Whether they're going to need points, Murph, is determined really by what Waterford do against Tipperary in their last game this weekend. So Waterford won't play in the last weekend. 3:15 start, Walsh Park, TG Carr this coming Sunday. Not to get into the preview material too much here, but Waterford need a result. Can they get a result against Tipperary on Sunday?
They can, because they've beaten Limerick not too long ago, and if you're beating Limerick, you're not too far away. The thing is with Waterford, and to touch back to the Galway performance, I would class this performance quite similar to Tipperary the week before, where I'd say it's very hard for Peter Queeley to put the finger on what actually happened here, because they were well off the pace. Like, even just from watching it, there's so many missed tackles. There were so many times, like you mentioned, Aaron Nyland. I can think of one of the scores Aaron Nyland got where I think he just sidestepped maybe one or two Waterford defenders and nobody kind of went with him, like, which is kind of symptomatic at times of where your tackling is just not 100%. It's at 90% and there's just cracks. Like, again, I mentioned it previously, only for Billy Nolan, it really could have been a high score here, which I think would have done Waterford a disservice considering the last couple of weeks they're after putting down. They can, yeah, like they can get a result against Tipperary. There's no doubt about that, because Tipperary are also coming off the back of trying to get their own house in order after their own performance against Limerick. So, you know, it's kind of two teams who are going to be coming off the back of performances they didn't want to have, and it's a question of how they respond. My inkling would be is that Tipperary are in a better place to respond at the moment, because, you know, they just have that little bit more belief, I suppose. They have a few more players tried and tested. So I just think Tipperary are probably in that position. But Waterford can absolutely get a result here. Like, the league can be funny this way. Week to week, teams can find it hard. I know Tipperary will have had the break at the moment, but, you know, it can be quite difficult on teams to keep going week on week and keep performing to really high levels. So it's interesting that there's two teams, though, like that, coming in off the back of two kind of stale performances that, you know, to try and duke it out. But I just give Tipperary the edge on this one. And like, the thing is, if Tipperary get back to the standards where they were playing, you know, previously, could beat Waterford very well. But, like, Waterford have just proven several times that they can be quite good at rebounding. You know, bad defeat to Cork in the first week, go out and beat Limerick then the following week. Like, the performance against Kilkenny would have warranted getting a point. You know, you wouldn't have felt too hard done by if you got a point. But then going out against Galway then, it just feels like they never even laid a glove on Galway. So it's the inconsistency with Waterford finds it a little bit hard to figure out what they're about at the moment, whereas Tipperary have shown us a little bit more. So you'd have to edge Tipperary on that one.
Yeah, Peter Queeley got a look at some of his Ballygunner players coming back in as well. So Ian Kenny, Aaron O'Neill, Paddy Levy, Kevin Mahoney, all involved at the weekend just gone by. So they're starting to kind of just deepen things a little bit as they head towards Munster scale. The thing is that Walsh Park is a really important factor here. So the points that Waterford have picked up so far, beat Offaly, beat Limerick, both at home. So there's no doubt that they're going to target this as a, you know, a potential win at home. And obviously, look, they're going to need at least a point if they're going to stay up.
But is that not a concern, like, just looking past the league at the minute? The league will come and go, and it'll be forgotten about regardless of where they finish, to be fair. But if you're only, kind of, I suppose, if you're producing your best performances at home, it can be expected. But the manner in which they got beaten at the weekend, with it, like, it was really bad. Like, I think they only got 8 points from play. Galway got 2-13 in a missed penalty. You know, so there was no signs. You'd always look at a defeat and say to yourself, right, what areas can I point to that I can put a positive spin there that we can utilise for next week? I don't have much, to be honest, when bad the performance of the goalkeeper. I can't say much more than that. The fact that they're strong at home is one thing. Yeah, and say, okay, fair play, strong at home, but you're in Munster. You have to travel. Go up to Limerick or up to Cork. Like, that's not that simple, I'd say. So, and I know there's other counties that have been difficult in the past that we always mentioned about Antrim. And I would always put down to the distance they travel. And I know Waterford Galway is no short distance either. And that could be a factor. The weather could be a factor too. But they need to produce something. And it's amazing how much the narrative can change weekly, as you mentioned, Murph. How, after a bad start, right, people have been written off completely the week after. Then they beat Limerick. Then they beat Offaly. Now it's a feel-good factor again.
Yeah.
You know, and now over the last fortnight, maybe they're not as high level as we put them at. But I think it's important that they have to, like, for the competition, yes, they have to win. But I think for themselves, they have to win. They need to get back on the positive momentum trail, because they took some positives out of the game in Nolan Park. But then they've all dissipated now. I think, in my opinion, they've all dissipated.
Yeah.
And they're gone. So now they have to kind of regenerate this momentum again, which is hard to do. We've always touched on this podcast.
Yeah, and I think for Waterford to carry something into the Munster Championship, they need to take something off Tipperary as well. Because if they took something off Kilkenny, then they could go, the Limerick performance in Kilkenny. But see, Limerick are a moving target now at the moment. They're getting really better, and vastly improving. So you could kind of say, Jesus, would we have beaten the Tipperary or the Limerick we played in week two? Would we beat them in week five? I don't know about it. So I think you need to pair it up with either a beating the Galway, a beating the Kilkenny, beating the Tipperary, something like that, to at least go at, okay, maybe we didn't catch Limerick on a week off. Whereas maybe if you enter the Munster Championship and your two wins are Limerick early in the Munster Championship and a depleted Offaly, your confidence then is going, Jesus, do we have anything to back this up? Whereas, so for Waterford, the emphasis on beating Tipperary galvanises that. Yeah, we are actually, we have the players that we can go out and beat a team if we're right on the day and we have our game together, we can go and do it. Tipperary don't need that. Like, Tipperary don't need to do that. So there's different elements for both teams as to why a victory there would be important. But for Waterford, I think it's important for them to take another victory before they go to Munster would be good for upstairs anyway, for mentally approaching it.
Yeah, the Skell permutations klaxon is going off here. So Waterford got 4 points, right? But they've lost to Kilkenny and Tipperary, so they're behind both of them on head-to-head. They're also behind both of them on scoring difference at the moment, if the teams were all to finish level. The only one thing is, if they were to beat Tipperary, they would then have head-to-head over Tipperary as well, which would suck Tipperary right into the relegation fight. And bear in mind, this is Waterford's last game, so they need a positive result if they're to move ahead of either Galway or Kilkenny, who, as I mentioned already, have head-to-head over them. So it's a crucial game. Really, really, really important one. Mm-hmm. And as I say, it's on the telly this weekend, so we've got a chance to watch it on Sunday afternoon. It's almost unthinkable, really, that Tipperary would end up in the relegation fight. But if they were to lose, Tip would then need a result in the last weekend if they were going to stay up. So still plenty to be decided in Division 1A. As I mentioned, Offaly are down. I've probably watched more of Offaly than the two lads so far this year. It's disappointment because I think the big worry that Offaly have right now, and I saw a couple of people were talking about it in the Spotify last week comments. We had a few Offaly supporters saying they were very worried about the season ahead. Offaly's scores from play are just not there. So reliant on Adam Screeny from Freeze at the moment, and that was the case again at the weekend just gone by. Like, Brian Deignan is kind of ploughing a lone enough furrow when it comes to scores from play, but Offaly aren't scoring enough. They're not hitting that 20-point mark enough, which is what's needed in Division 1A. If you're going to give yourself a chance, like we talk about Waterford there, who only got 5 points in the second half, you get 16 points. This day and age, 16 points is not going to win you a game. You don't have a hope. And Offaly are kind of hitting that kind of 17 to 19-point mark, but just not enough. The Tipperary game was obviously ugly. The Galway game got a little bit ugly the week before in Birr in terms of the score that they conceded. But generally they've been doing okay. Like, they kind of scrapped away against Waterford, scrapped away against Kilkenny. Wouldn't be that concerned about the beatings being handed out by the teams. But this low scoring could well come back to haunt them when it comes to the Leinster Championship. So there would have been an aspiration definitely last summer that, oh, why can't Offaly give Wexford a good go or give Dublin a good go as they did in Championship last season? And then obviously they have to beat Kildare if they're going to have a chance of staying in Leinster this coming summer. If they can't find more scores from play, and I appreciate they're missing a lot of players at the moment and missing their captain in Charlie Mitchell and guys who've picked up knocks during the league and have been out for quite a while, if they can't balance this out a little bit more, Adam Screeny Freeze are not going to be enough to keep Offaly in the Leinster Championship this year. So, little bit concerning. I think going back to Division 1B is not going to do them any particular harm, but I would be worried from that front. But I am mindful that there's half a dozen players that still have to come back into that team. Mm-hmm. So we shall see what happens. But I share some of the concerns that some of those people had on Spotify last week. Just generally, what happened at the weekend just gone by. So Clare are promoted back at the first earliest opportunity is maybe the best way of putting this. They won against Carlow on Saturday night very comprehensively, 128 to 18 points. It's been a bit of a breeze for the Banner coming back out of 1B. They'll carry a bit of momentum into Munster on the back of all this as well. In Division 2 on Saturday afternoon, we had London winning against Derry by 3-7 to 14 points, and Meath won on the road against Mayo by 20 points to 1 goal and 12. We already talked about all the games in the top flight, so Galway 2-18, Waterford 16 points, Limerick 2-19, off 17 points, and it was Cork 3 goals and 12 points, Kilkenny 115. In Division 1B on Sunday, we had Down 123, Kildare 3 goals and 24 points. So Kildare's very impressive run in the second flight continues, and Dublin hammering Antrim at Corrigan Park by 131 to 1 goal and 16. And in Division 2, the tabletoppers Laois winning away from home against Westmeath. They beat Westmeath in hurling and football at the weekend, but Laois winning 123 to 17 points. What does that mean for the tables at the moment? Well, Skell mentioned Cork, 4 wins from 4, 8 points at the top of 1A. Limerick just behind them with 6 points from their 4 games. You've got Galway, Tipperary, Kilkenny all on 4 points in the middle of the table, with Waterford also on 4, but sitting in the relegation place at the moment. Waterford have played 5 games, the others have played 4, and Offaly are down, having lost all 5 of their games so far. In Division 1B, Clare already promoted, 10 points on the board after 5 games. Wexford are still in the best position to qualify from 1B at the moment, but they go to play against Clare this coming Sunday. That game is also on TV. Wexford on 7 points. You've got Dublin on 5, with both those teams having played 4 games. Kildare have now got 4 points from their 4 games, with the 2 wins that they've picked up against Antrim, and then that win in the weekend just gone by against Down. Carlow are in a relegation fight at the moment. They've got 2 points from their 4 games. Antrim have got 2 points from 5, so just 1 game left for Antrim, where they're going to have to win if they want to get out the relegation spots. And Down are destined to be relegated, but obviously they're not mathematically relegated just yet, with Carlow and Antrim on 2 points, but Down have lost all 4 of their matches so far. In Division 2, Laois are going to the final, 4 wins from 4, they're on 8 points. You've got Meath on 6 points so far. The only loss they've had has been against their neighbours Westmeath, so they're on 6 points. You've got Kerry and Westmeath both on 5, they both played 4 games. London have got 3 points in their 5, and the 2 teams in the relegation spots at the moment in the third flight are Derry and Mayo, who both lost at the weekend. Derry have played 5 games, Mayo have played 4. So there's still a lot to be determined in 1B, but it's going to be Laois against either Meath, Kerry or Westmeath, you would imagine, in the final there, with Meath currently in pole position. And Meath have to play Kerry at Meath before it finishes as well. So that's going to be a crucial game in deciding who goes to the final. Another change that happened at Congress, by the way, was that the Joe McDonagh Cup from next season, this comes in, is that Laois had a motion which removed the preliminary quarterfinals, but there was also an alteration to the Joe McDonagh as well. So what will happen now is whoever tops the table in the Joe McDonagh will go directly to the final, and second versus third will be a semi-final. I think the thinking around this was, because this happened a few times in the last few years, a team gets to the top of the table, they play a weakened team in the last game because they're getting ready for the final. Now there's actually an incentive to top the table, and therefore, you know, you go straight to a final, so you get that bonus. There's no point in pulling up in the last game. So that was the thinking on that. I don't think anyone would really disagree with it. I don't think anyone, Murph, would disagree with the preliminary quarterfinals being gone. We had Laois and Dublin in 2019. We had some horrific beatings handed out outside of that. I remember Tipperary absolutely cleaning Offaly out of it. Limerick beating Westmeath a few years ago. Like, there's been some really bad ones. Even last year when we thought, do you know what, Kildare on the back of winning the McDonagh Cup might give Dublin a game. And then it's like, look, the reality is with a 6-day turnaround, Kildare were on the beer during the week and it didn't happen for them in that game whatsoever. Mm. The reality is that I don't think anyone's going to have any nostalgia for the preliminary quarterfinals being gone.
No, they won't. And I think the big part of it is that I don't think the provincial finals, like the Munster final last year, people were very upset that it finished on penalties. But, you know, I think something that we would have said is that, well, what's the other solution? Because the other games are coming thick and fast, particularly the preliminary quarterfinals. And one of the solutions we said, well, if you wanted to bring, if there was a particular match i.e. the Munster final or provincial finals you want to bring to a replay, you need to get rid of that preliminary quarter final. And like you said, look, they tried it. It didn't turn out to be fruitful. It just turned out the teams were getting beaten. And also delayed, I suppose. I was just trying to think of the team. Wasn't it like, did Dublin play Carlow? Carlow won the Joe McDonagh and Dublin played them and hammered the life out of them. Well, they didn't hammer the life out of them. It's a bit more competitive, but it kind of delayed, was it Carlow's celebrating of the Joe McDonagh final, etc. Yeah. Wasn't that kind of...
It was 3 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. So wasn't there something like that? And like, you know, we've just seen the preliminary quarter final just kind of get in the way of either potentially playing replays for provincial finals, but also the fact of teams just taking hammerings. So look, it's I think it's a welcome tweak. I don't think anybody was benefiting at the time from taking savage hammerings in these matches. And I don't think the teams that were giving out the hammerings were benefiting massively either.
Yeah, the quarterfinals now will be second in Leinster, third versus Munster, and the reverse. The runners-up in Munster will play third in Leinster. My understanding is they're going to be at neutral venues still. I saw some people arguing that maybe it should be a case of the beaten finalists get home advantage. But then again, I'm not sure why you get home advantage for losing a provincial final. I think neutrals for the quarterfinals still make sense, I think. So that's what it's going to be.
It's been hurless last year, hasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, and I think it makes perfect sense to continue to go in that way. Well, we obviously had one at Croke Park. We had Dublin and Limerick at Croke Park last year.
I
think it makes sense, though, that you keep neutral venues for them. So that they're the changes. What do you reckon, Skell, about this descent rule? Because they didn't talk about hurling finals going to a replay, and the reason they didn't was they didn't want to condense that time for the beaten finalists getting ready for a quarter final. Football, you will have a replay if it ends level after extra time. But the descent rule has come in. So you're finished playing, unless you go back to the junior team to play a bit outfield. But if you have a go at the official now, your free is going to be brought forward by 30 metres. What do you reckon?
I was added to the junior A, junior group there at the weekend.
There you go.
So it's official now.
One more year.
And I met the manager over the weekend and he said, you're not going to goals. I think that would have come from the club game, to be fair, rather than the county game. We don't see a huge amount of dissent, to be fair. It's rare. It happens, of course it happens, but it's rare. I think in the club game, it happens an awful lot more. I honestly don't mind it. I don't mind it, to be fair. I think if something that is of concern to a specific body, i.e. the referees, well, then action it. You know, we want to, the more we want to promote the game, of course, we want kids to play, but we also need refs. We need umpires, we need sideline officials. And so if there's any way where you can kind of assist them to make the job a little bit easier, it's a very hard job, you know that. Do it. So I have no problem with that whatsoever. So I think it's a good move. And there's probably more moves to make as well. I think we're guilty. Like, we look at soccer and you have instances there where you could have 10 players thrown the referee if he makes a decision. I don't like that. Like, that's a huge form of intimidation, if not barely, you know, possibly bullying, you say. And I just see our kids will watch them games and they go, this is normal. We can do this in our sport. No, we can't be thrown the ref like 10 minutes at a time. And I'd love to see us adopt the rugby approach, where it's, you know, the captain is held in very, the referee holds the captain in very high respect, and it's the same way as well. So sometimes I don't see, maybe some referees now will be guilty of nearly, they'd have like a power, you know, they're wrestling for powerlessness. They feel like they're the main man, obviously. You know, whereas in rugby, I feel like it's a very balanced situation where they're trying to facilitate the game as best they can. So they treat the referees and the captains vice versa with great respect. I'd like to see that done. And there's some ones in as well. You know, there's some little rules that piss me the fuck off, drives me cracked. Like, you know, if you're chasing the game, lads, right, and you're trying to take a puck out, and someone that stands in front of you.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was happened one year in a club championship game with us, right? We were taking puck outs fast. And this lad kept coming on top of me. So I said to the umpires, if he does it again, right, I'm going to pull across him. I'm fucked up for now at this stage, okay? And the umpire said, will you get sent off? I said, I don't care. I'm gone past it. It's a senior championship rush. When he comes and slow me down, I swing the ball and bang. So I get a yellow card. But something has to get done about that kind of stuff. Stuff where you're directly impacting the play, I think it has to get sanctioned heavier.
How
the goalkeeper was out for a puck out, it was becoming a 65 grand, but if you're standing in his way, or you're just trying to slow down a free, or if you hit the ball away, that's why he's me soft.
Yeah. you know, what's funny, I think, with that is, like, do you know, at the moment, I think I saw the call over the last couple of weeks that the mayor of Ferna wasn't allowed. Like, obviously, people are like, oh, they should be allowed to enter the field to give a message to players. I think Ben O'Connor might have been saying it, or someone was saying it. I'm not going to put it in Ben O'Connor's book.
There was Ben O'Connor did mention it, and then I think that was on the Saturday night, and then a few other mentioned on the Sunday, naturally got asked about it. I think Kylie got asked about it, and Johnny Kelly definitely said he'd be in favour of it as well, yeah.
Yeah, and I get it, but I suppose I remember a particular match in which this was brought in to stop Mayor Furness coming on field. Galway man, Skehill, what's his name?
Greg Hendy.
Greg Hendy.
I knew we were going straight away.
We played Dublin, and Greg Hendy came on the field and caught a ball that was in play. Yes. So, like, when lads go on, and lads go like, oh, where did this come from? I was on a field when we were taking a crick free. Greg Hendy was running off the field. Ball passes him, sticks the paw out and catches.
It was a great catch, as I recall, as well.
Great catch, because he catches it and just drops it and keeps going and doesn't look at the referee, as if to say, like, oh, I didn't do anything there. And, like, it was... So when lads go back to try and trace these elements back to, oh, why are we doing this? There was a nuts period there where Jason Ford was shouldering Davy Fitz and Greg Kennedy was catching balls on the field. And, like, so... I get it. I would be in support, because it's chaos on the field, of absolutely a lad coming back in and, you know, being able to give a message. Of course, I get that. And I agree with Johnny Kelly and the lads. But I always like to highlight that, lads, when we actually had this, do we have gobshites running all over the place, catching balls? Not to say that with Greg Kennedy.
If you know him as a character, right? He's a sound man, right?
Oh, I wouldn't doubt him. Yeah, yeah.
He saw this as danger, and he went to stop that intentionally. 100%.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It was. He met out in it after what was a reflex action. You know, he was passing the ball.
No way.
He grabbed that ball and stopped
it. It is a case of lads knowing exactly what to do. And I was on Hill 16 a good few years ago. And now 15, I'd say, or 16. And I remember Kilkenny played a match, and there was a Kilkenny hurl carrier. Somebody broke a cornerback, broke a hurl or something like this. And the ball was breaking out towards, away from the goal, but an opposition forward was going to rise it. And as he was going to rise it, a spare hurl, Kilkenny spare hurl, was fucked in by the come on Ferna, or whatever you want to call him, was thrown in and passed between the opposition player and the ball that he was about to rise, like flew past his face to get into the Kilkenny cornerback. And and that would have just said, oh, Jesus, I was just thrown in the hurl. But like, there's dark arts there that these additional people who are around the field employ. We've seen more water boys get yellow cards than players over the last couple of years, but it's funny. It's funny. Not against one, I'm just reminding you.
Yeah. One, I would... Go on.
I'm interested to know if the two of you, is there any rule you'd like to see brought in? I've just mentioned one there about the guy stopping the goalie taking a fast puck out. And then he'd like... in particular, that you think should be added or removed?
Well, I was just about to mention, I'd agree with Patrick Corgan. I was watching him on The Examiner for his column last week, where one that really sticks in the craw for me, referees not getting in to break up melees at the moment, where they just stand back and they're handing out cards. I think we'd have far fewer melees like we had earlier in the year if a referee actually stepped in. Yeah, I really dislike to say they step back and just hand out cards.
Yeah, I was involved in the match, and not to talk about my own experience, Brian Gavin still has a split on his nose there. I'm stepping in trying to separate it. Yeah, I get you.
I will say, right, I will say, and I've been guilty of this myself, in club games, don't mind you.
Yeah.
I'm in a melee with a fella, right, and I'm just about to clock him, like, join a dirty one, like, in the ribs or something like that, and I see the ref is right beside me, okay, and trying to hang off, I won't do it. If the ref's not there... I'm giving it to
him. I love the way you're saying I'm in a melee with a fella. Like, as if it's just like a friendly thing that you're in. But I suppose I'm picturing it from the dramatic side of, like, I guess what you're saying, that like lads should be able to step in. But like, what's Thomas Welch meant to do? Go in and tackle Garrod Hegarty? Like, I mean...
I know, but like, think about the Tipperary Cork game particularly, right? Yeah. That could have been diffused so easily.
Yeah.
Jeez, I don't know. Well, that was a lot of numbers there now, I have to say.
Yeah, but say if he'd stepped in at the point that the two lads are resting to the ground, right?
But hang on.
Next thing, you don't end up with 30 lads in the
middle. But remember the ball's in play now.
Guaranteed.
And the ref is 50 yards away.
Yeah.
Okay.
So by the time he gets over to the melee, it's already got him to double figures handy.
Yeah.
Then what do you do? Do you go... You know, hurl's flying. We saw Brian Gavin, as you said, Murph.
Yeah.
He came away with 4 or 5 stitches, did he?
No, I think he wore, like, I don't even think it was that bad. It bled, but he wore this little patch on his nose for about, I'd say, 8 weeks. He didn't even wear it for, like, you know, that stopped bleeding 2 hours later.
Don't think you got any stitches. I'll check.
He didn't get any stitches, but we met him. When I say we met him, we were in Dublin a couple of weeks later having pints, 2 weeks, I'd say, and he still had it on the nose. And that was Brian Gavin loving that people recognised that he was after getting split. And he's a good character as well, so I give it to him.
Yeah, we'll see if before the pod finishes, he comes back to me on this one. If not, I'll mention it in the members pod. Let's check there.
Steri-strips, I think, was the old Steri-strip, I think, got him.
They were like the Robbie Fowler strip he had over his nose for a while. Yeah.
But I don't think, like, see, this is the thing, like, that melee, I don't think would have been stopped. Because I'm trying to think back. It was Colin McAllister, I think, was a Cork referee a good few years ago. We played Tipperary in 2012 semi-final. I remember start that match, there was just scraps all over the field. I remember down in the full back line, we were tackling lads out around midfield then. I think James McGrath and a few boys were going at it. And in the full forward line, I think Curran broke his hurl off Owen Larkin, and he had half a hurl for about a minute after that. Mm. What's Colin McAllister going to do that? Literally the length of the field, there's lads fighting each other. What can you do? Like, that's the extreme end of it. But I think if these rules are to be successful, you have to apply them to the extreme example of it. And if it still stands up in the extreme example, well, then it's a viable solution. But I just think it's a very tough thing. If hypothetically 30 lads and like Cork and Limerick, if hypothetically them in the Munster Championship go at it, like, you know, what's Sean Stackman to do? Like, what's it? Like, you know, what's he going to do?
Grab
Brian Hayes and Will O'Donoghue and these lads and put them in a headlock. Like, I mean, sure, what's he going to do? So I think it's a nice one to put on paper, but it's not realistic. If a scrap gets big, you're at nothing.
Right. To Scale's point, right? Listeners, by all means, stick it in the comments. What rules do you want to change? What does hurling need to change? And I guarantee you somebody's going to say that the entire hurling rule book needs to be rewritten and the tackle needs to be defined. That's fine. If that's what you think, stick it in there and we'll come back to it next week. So just before we finish the main pod for this week then, what's happening this weekend? Well, we've got a hurling-dominated one on the TV because it's a break in the football. So on Saturday, we've got two matches, Galway against Kilkenny, 5:15 in Salt Hill. That's on RTE. The TG Carra game is Limerick against Cork at the Gaelic Grounds at 7 p.m. In Division 1B, just a must win for Dublin now because they need to keep the pressure on with Wexford playing Clare on Sunday. Dublin versus Down, Parnell Park at 5:00. Then in the Hurling League Division 1A on Sunday, the TG Carra game at 3:15 is Waterford against Tipperary, where Waterford really need a result in their last league game. That game's at Walsh Park. In 1B, the early game on TG Carra, which is at 1:15, is Clare versus Wexford. So Clare already promoted, but Wexford looking to get a win on the road to keep their promotion bid on track. And then you've got Kildare against Carlow. And Carlow under a little bit of pressure going to their neighbours there. That is the 2:00 game. In Division 2, you've got all these matches on Sunday afternoon. The 1:00 game is Kerry versus Mayo, where Kerry will be looking to keep pressure at the top of the table. Laois versus Meath is an important game because Laois are heading towards the final. Meath could do with a result. And you would expect that Westmeath will win at home against Derry, who are second from bottom at the moment. The Laois-Meath game and Westmeath versus Derry both start at 2:00. So plenty to enjoy. 4 games on the TV across the weekend. So we'll have plenty to talk about on the pod next week. My thanks again to Apple Green, who helped to keep the lights on for the pod. They are helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. They are the official sponsors of the Hurling Pod and indeed the sponsors of hurling on Off the Ball as well. James Skell, you will be back with us for the members pod, which let's be deadly honest, because we got up for Skell at 7:00 on a Tuesday morning, will be recorded directly after this where we'll preview the games of the weekend.
No fussing from Skell.
Yeah. So, you know, no problem, Skell. We'd no issue getting up at 6:00 in the morning for you.
I don't care, lads. I was up at 5:15 down with Kev this morning. So
I'll be honest, Will, you're doing a lot of sympathy there because I had no clue what time it was. I had an alarm on and I was up anyway, so I was like, here, I'm not going to get back to baby talk now, but I found out we just don't have that luxury anymore.
Whatever the babies, Alexa said to me when my alarm went off this morning, it is currently -1 degrees. So yeah,
well, you're not recording outside though, so you're all right.
there is that. I can put the radiator on, I'm fine. But still, it was still a bit chilly getting up. Just saying.
Remember I texted you in a message there. I received a message from Tomás de Burka. I think he hurled against you. Well, Skehill, he said he hurled against you up in Galway, Galway man. But he just wanted to be, he sent a message. It's not something we normally do. But his niece, Rachel Nolan, she's feeling a little bit unwell at the moment. So just wanted to wish her best wishes in her recovery. But his nephews as well, Shane and Michael. Shane is playing under 8s, I believe, at Muckalee. They all play at Muckalee in Kilkenny. And Michael is playing under 14 as well. And I think he's trials with Kilkenny. So just wanted to give him a shout out and wish best wishes to Rachel in her recovery as well. So there you are, Tomás. Yeah. Very best of luck. Yeah.
fair play to him for getting contact as well. I don't think we'll be doing regular shout-outs, but if it merits a shout-out, you'll get one.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm happy to give you a shout-out to good Muckle E people, so more than happy.
Indeed. Murph, we'll see you on the members' pod as well.
So on, lads.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.